you know, I grew up very poor, and it wasn't, I don't think I ever thought I was poor. I thought that we didn't have that much money, but I didn't know what a lot of money was.
Unconventional Life, the show where I interview successful entrepreneurs, artists, creatives, and thought leaders on how they earn their living in non-traditional ways. We will explore how they took the path less traveled, what their revenue model looks like, and why they are prioritizing their passion over their paycheck. I'm your host, Joel Schroeder. Unconventional Life, welcome. This is your host, Joel Schroeder, tuning in today from Boulder, Colorado. Today's guest is joining me from San Diego, California. I have got Aang Tang in the house. Aang, are you ready to take us down the path less traveled?
Yes, I am. Thanks for having me, Jules.
Yeah, super excited to have this gentleman on the show, from real estate to Bitcoin mining to NFTs to all kinds of, you know, stuff about financial freedom and investing. We've got a lot of stuff that we're going to cover. And for those of you that aren't familiar with Aang, he is the CEO and founder of Tuzi Capital. He's an experienced real estate investor with 150 million assets under management. I know you've been an economist by training from the Wharton School of Business. You've also led data science and analytics at Apple, Capital One, AT&T, with a real focus on high cash flow investments and how to provide passive income to investors by doing multifamily, industrial, senior living assets, and all different other kinds of things. Also using the blockchain, which we talked about just briefly before. So I know we've got a lot of stuff we could dive into today. Welcome to the show, Aang. Fill in any gaps that you might've left out and give us a glimpse into your personal life.
Yeah, thanks for that introduction. I think that's a high level view of the how I've done all this. So the why, I'd love to talk about that. My personal experience, I was born in a refugee camp. I was born in a refugee camp in Thailand. My parents are Cambodian. We escaped the Khmer Rouge, pretty terrible genocide. And I'm a lucky immigrant. I immigrated when I was three, grew up very poor, and I was lucky to be in America with that kind of hardship and that kind of limitation and scarcity. Because ultimately, I think a lot of that shaped and formulated who I am, and sort of the need for passive income and income streams and sort of security. And so everything I've done, you describe a lot of what I've done, has sort of been with that big why of supporting my family, of having a base layer of income. And it's allowed me to do lots of different things, allowed me to work at many different companies, take bolder steps in my career, go to the Peace Corps, where I met my wife in the Republic of Georgia. Yeah, so none of all this wouldn't have been possible without, you know, getting to real estate and investing and thinking like an investor. And now I invest in NFTs and flip them and have Bitcoin mining. So I do a lot of things, but thematically, it all ties together to creating income streams to provide yourself financial freedom. Financial freedom for me is freedom of choice, of agency, of doing what you want to do. And for me, I do love all the investments I do, and I'll keep doing that. And I love helping people out and learning and teaching. One of my biggest learnings recently has been all the ways that investing can be a very tax advantage, income stream. You know, being a W-2 employee at Apple, making quite a bit of money, you pay a lot of taxes. And then compare that to owning real estate and getting all the benefits of taxes, depreciation and opportunity zones, fairly rarely paid taxes. So it's something that I love to talk about and sort of helps define thematically what I've been doing.
Yeah. Absolutely. Well, what a story and an opener. And there's so much we can dive into in Unconventional Life. We've got a great giveaway coming up for you a little bit later on in the show. So make sure to stay tuned for that if this topic is of interest to you as we dive in. And I just want to start, you know, really talking about even the mindset, and particularly the mindset of opportunity. You know, I can't even begin to imagine what it was like, you know, being a refugee, coming from that world, then immigrating, you know, into America, and then really seeing the need, like you said, for passive income and the need for that financial freedom. And a lot of times, you know, people to even, you know, a lot of it's like, well, I can't be an investor, or I can't worry about financial freedom and things like that if I'm just trying to survive, or if I'm just trying to figure out, you know, what this is. And so to move into future planning and even to look at opportunity, you know, in a bigger scale, how did you do that on your own journey to really even give you the mindset and the mind frame of like, yeah, it doesn't matter what I have now, but also where I'm going. And how did you balance that mindset when you really set yourself up for success and even being in this conversation for some people that might even have a barrier to being in the conversation?
I think it's 100% mindset. And it's kind of a cop out because, you know, I know what it's like to be in a bad situation, to not have what you potentially deserve or what you should or what's basic. But when you start thinking about doing something about it versus thinking about it and thinking about what limitations you have, I think there's so many steps. And when you're in that space, you know, I grew up very poor and it wasn't, I don't think I ever thought I was poor. I thought that we didn't have that much money, but I didn't know what a lot of money was. I knew that we had food and we had to save, and I would hustle. I would trade Pokemon cards and magic cards, save lunch tickets and sell those. You know, you'd learn to survive, and it wasn't for me surviving. It was just sort of making some extra resources, having a mindset of that I could do it, that I can do these things, that it wasn't ever about a limitation. It was more about an opportunity.
I love that. That makes, yeah, it's definitely a great frame of mind for it. And, you know, from that place, like what led you into real estate? And then particularly if you look at the journey you've had into real estate for someone that's looking to use real estate, you know, as a passive income revenue stream, what are you seeing working now? And if you could go back in time from the things that you know now, how would you advise or recommend, you know, someone to get started?
Yeah, I got really lucky. I used to work in investment banking and I helped cause the financial crisis in 2008. Sorry about that. And so that affected my career. I got lucky in the sense that I saw that happen and I was able to have some funds to buy my first investment. I remember very clearly it was a triplex in the LA region and for $126,000, and I made $1,200 a month. I put $36,000 down, and to have $36,000, first of all, it's a lot of money for sure. When I was 23, I'm a prodigious saver. And then I was able to refinance and do all these things and pull money out. But I gravitated towards real estate specifically because I didn't like the volatility of stock market. I didn't like the volatility of tracking things and seeing things go up and down. And I've kind of liked the income stream, the steady approach of if you, as long as you pay your mortgage for real estate investment, and as long as you have rental income, you don't need to care what your house or apartments are worth. You just have to care that you're taking care of the community, that the families that live there. And that helped me start even having extra $1,000 a month, which is a lot for sure, helped me make better decisions in my life. I literally made a decision to go to Peace Corps right after that because I had that first apartment building, my first triplex. If I was recommending people get into real estate now, which I definitely do, first of all, wait potentially until Q4, potentially it's a little bit of a bubble. it really depends on where you live. If you live in a very nice area, very expensive area with high price to income ratios, probably not the best place to invest. Think outside your scope. Think outside your scope in terms of potentially investing in another part of America. There's lots of great parts of America that are more affordable, that have better cash flow. And definitely look to partner. That's something that I should have done earlier. How to find partners is lots of meetup groups and, you know, real estate people who want to help. It's a very helpful industry, I find, especially if you find somebody who, if you don't have money, you potentially have someone with time that can help. If you don't have time, but you have money, it's potentially you find somebody who has that and you can partner together.
Yeah. Absolutely. And I know you've done a lot with, you know, optimizing multifamily, industrial, senior living assets. Why those types of things versus single family? And what have you noticed in just in terms of the strategy of like, let's say you find the partner, you get into that. I've actually, you know, started, I've got my third or fourth property that I'm looking to, you know, put under, and I've done a lot of short-term rental and things like that. So part of my own personal curiosity in asking the question, but why those types of investments particularly, and what do you see make some of those investments quite successful?
I used to buy all these, when I say single family, I mean 1 to 4 units. It still feels like single family. You still have to go to a mortgage to Wells Fargo, you know, Citibank, whatever, Chase, to get a bank loan. As a residential bank loan, they pull your credit, they do all these things, check your income. That's a residential bank loan. It takes a long time. when you buy something $300,000 or $500 million, it's the same amount of time you do a $5 million. When you have three tenants or one tenant, you have this high variance, right? They could be a terrible tenant, most likely to be great. Most likely you have good occupancy. But if you have one person leave, you know this, it just changes your cash flow dynamics very greatly. And you have, but when you have a lot, it becomes easier. Scale helps in the industry. You get lower variable costs, lower property management fees, lower everything. And it really helps. And when you think of it like a business, which is how I think about it, I create a process and hire people to run a 164 unit apartment building, which is what I'm closing on right now in Atlanta, Georgia. I think you should definitely start somewhere. Buying single family is not that bad. It's a really actually generally a better return on your money. Return on your time is questionable. Mm-hmm. When you think about single family, when you try to sell something, it always depends on what your neighbor's house sells for. And that has lots of pros and cons. That means that if your house is renting for $10,000 or $5,000 and your neighbor is renting for $2,000, but you have the same square foot, same, you know, area, you sell for the same. If he sells for $800,000, your valuation is $800,000. But with apartment buildings and bigger commercial buildings, like industrial senior living, your valuation is based on cap rate, which essentially how much income are you actually generating from that property? And if you can optimize that income, you actually can create more valuation. So you have control of that valuation. In that scenario of those two houses where you make more income, your house should be worth more as an investment. But it's not, because it's, you know, it's more like a stock, which has pros and cons. You could sell it easier, that's for sure. There's lots of people who would buy it that's not looking to buy it as an investment. When you buy something to live as an emotional thing, you make different decisions. But that also means that if you're facing those people as buying competitors, they might make not a great financial decision, because they're not looking at a financial decision, they're looking at it as a home life decision. And how single family houses do move up and down more. Up more is definitely the theme the last few years. And you know, in the last financial crisis, single family houses foreclosed in some states at around 30% rate, multifamily foreclosed at a 0.2% rate. So very different dynamics, even though they're both real estate. It's a business versus a stock. And you know, when you're looking at buying 10, you start getting capped out. So I always think about scale. If I'm going to do anything, am I going to do it 10 times over? Am I going to do it? Because building the first iPhone is a lot of work. It's going to be expensive. You're not going to make it, you know, it's not going to be that great. But the millionth iPhone, it's going to be pretty good. And it's going to be a lot cheaper. And so for me, I am in the business of scale. Can I put scale in something? Can I make it better? Is my 50th time really good? And can I create cost efficiencies across the board?
Yeah, I love that. And I think great advice, you know, in a lot of different applications, you know, just minimum, you know, movement, maximum impact is another way I think about it in its own way. And, you know, where do you find some of these opportunities? What's the best place for people, you know, to look? I'm sure there's a lot of different places as well. And, you know, even in terms of securing the funding, you know, I think a lot of times there's a lot of barriers of like, if you don't go a traditional like bank loan, that there's a lot of other different, you know, funding sources and things like that. And just any quick comments on any of those things for our listeners who might be looking to understand some of those things further.
Yeah, there's a lot of great websites nowadays to look at commercial buildings or apartment buildings or single family houses. Zillow, Redfin are really great sites. They have great economic data. LoopNet and Crexi, C-R-E-X-I, are both good commercial websites. In general, when you're in the industry, you generally don't look at these websites. You get past the deals to you, the investments to you, the properties to you through the brokers because they know you. So it does pay to be in the industry. It's probably not very helpful for somebody starting out. but you know, I think there's so many internet resources that at least gets you started. You might not make the best deal, but that's okay. Someone like me isn't going to buy a single family house and spend that much time to do that. So there's lots of opportunity across lots of different layers. And I think from a financing perspective, there's two types of financing. One, how much money can you put in? Two, how much money can you borrow? I'm actually a big fan of leverage, but I am also a big fan of cash flowing investments. I generally don't invest for appreciation, except for my NFTs. because if I can buy something and it cash flows well, I will leverage it to a very comfortable level, which is generally as much as possible. I can borrow cheap government debt at 3% and then make 10% on it. That's arbitrage. So every dollar I'm borrowing, I'm making 7 cents. That's amazing. I'll borrow, you know, give me $1 billion. I'll make, I make a ton of money. And because of inflation and, you know, the stimulus money and all this other stuff, the dollar would just degrade over time. So my 30-year mortgage is going to be worth less over time. And I can deduct the interest and I can use depreciation to defer taxes on the income. There's so many great benefits of investing in real estate. And whether you invest yourself or invest with a fund like ours, which, you know, essentially I'm pulling together a bunch of people together and we're investing something together and we all take the same direct benefits of it. It just puts you in the mindset of being an investor, of optimizing your capital, your choices. Because if you start thinking about optimization of capital, it's kind of sounds like a complicated thing, but really it's just about if you're going to put 40% down on your house versus 20% down on your house. You might think that putting 40% down will make you have less interest rates. True. But what if you could use that 20% that you could use on opportunity costs and invest in something, maybe another property that generates 10%. So now if you look at a portfolio of two things, your mortgage payments, your payments, monthly payments across both those things are lower. So you start making these decisions based on opportunity costs. And that's on the financial sense. Then hopefully you're also doing it on the time sense. What's my opportunity cost of time? What am I giving up by doing this, by saying yes to this or saying no to this?
Yeah, I love that. I feel like you and I could talk for hours about this topic. And right, I'm going to have to put you on for a round two on here. But my last question for you before we jump into the rapid fire on an unconventional life is stay tuned for that giveaway coming up just shortly after that. I want to talk a little bit about NFTs. And I know you mentioned that briefly, just on how you're doing, you know, working with NFTs and even, you know, the resale of them. Can you give us a little glimmer into the world of what's happening? I also know you do some Bitcoin mining as well. But for those, you know, I know at unconventional life we talked a little bit about NFTs, but just yeah, briefly your understanding of it and just some of the opportunities that you're seeing with NFTs.
Non-fungible tokens. What's really cool right now is the technology layer of non-fungible tokens. But if you don't understand what that is, what the heck that is, it's just a unique digital collectible that has transparent value, meaning you can go to a website, OpenSea.com, for example, and see this digital representation of an ape, which I have one. and you can see that it's buying and selling history. You can see this community. And it's all about the community because you can actually tie one-to-one that you own this thing. Some of these really cool NFT projects that are selling for maybe hundreds of millions, essentially like you're showing off that you have this. And not even the $100 million projects, but like the $10,000 projects, still kind of a lot of money. It's about you have this, so you have exclusive access to something. Anyone doing any IP, any branding, any media, you should do it with NFTs because you now start giving people the opportunity to make money, to have liquidity, to be a supporter of your brand. If I'm making a book, if I'm writing a book, I'm probably releasing the first 1,000 as a digital first mint copy with an NFT, and then they can resell it in the future, and it's a collectible. Right? It's about creating that sense of collection and community. And the collection doesn't really make sense unless you have that strong community of like people who want to support it because they can see that there's residual value. And that's a really interesting thing. And as an artist, which I'm not an artist, but if you're an artist, you definitely get into NFTs. If you create an art piece in the real world, you sell it for $10,000 and then it gets resold, and you're Van Gogh, and then you know, it gets, after you die, you're still living, hopefully, it's like it sells for like tens of millions of dollars. You don't get a piece of that. But with NFTs, it's contractually in the code to give you a residual of every resale. So you have such a strong incentive to make it as lasting as possible. You don't just create something and just like try to sell it for as much money as possible. You actually try to create something, you sell it for something reasonable, and then you try to make a community so that people want to buy into that community, and you get a piece of that 4 or 5%, it depends, 10%, as much as that. And you could sell it, you know, have it be sold every time and literally just make passive income from it. I'm probably going to be launching a couple of NFT projects.
Yeah, I love that. And there's so much more I want to say. I'm also a musician and artist, and I was in releasing a book. So I've got a lot of ideas brewing.
Definitely get into that.
Yeah. So good. Well, my last question for you, and we're going to talk about the giveaway just after that. You know, when you think about the unconventional life, what does living the unconventional life mean to you?
I think the unconventional life is not having to ask for PTO, not having to wait on something because you think there's a step in between. A lot of it is really, first of all, it's not about seeing someone do something really, you know, making a lot of money and wanting that. And yeah, it's about knowing what makes you happy and what provides you the time and space to make you happy. For me, it's always been about flexibility. I always wanted options. And that means I needed to make sure I have the ability to have options in my time. And after I left Apple, I used to work a lot less in the corporate world. I work a lot more in entrepreneurial land. As many of your entrepreneur audience know, it's a lot of work and you're working 24/7. But you're so excited about everything. And it's, you know, the sky's the limit. The unconventional life for me is all of that. It's just having an idea and then just going for it.
Yeah, so good. I love that. Ing Tang, everyone. Ing, tell us about the giveaway that you've got for one of our listeners.
So I have, I do a lot of education webinars on financial freedom and taxes and real estate investing and whatnot. I would love to provide your one person audience a consulting session with me. People ask me to mentor them or whatnot. I actually don't have time generally, but I would love to provide that for you guys.
Such a generous giveaway. Unconventional Lifers, head over to the website, unconventionallifeshow.com. Click on the giveaway tab. Feel free to send us an email if you also really, really, really want to win this giveaway. Like Ing said, it is definitely a rare opportunity, and we'll select the winner 1 week after the episode airs. And Ing, for those that want to learn more about what you're up to in the world, 2Z Capital, even getting in the realm of investing, like you said, I know you've got a lot of free resources. You've got a lot of different topics of ways that you share about this, a lot of different avenues for how you share about this. What's the best place for people to follow along and stay in touch and stay connected and all those things?
So you can follow me on all the socials. I'm probably very unique. Tozy Capital, sign up on our website. You get access to all of our investments as well as educational webinars. We have one every month. Typically, I have a YouTube channel. I created TikTok for fun. Then I have 55,000 followers. It's kind of a lot of work to be a content creator. My content's mostly about saving money, and I feature my son in it. Always happy to connect, and feel free to reach out and check out potentially being an investor with us, participating in passive income.
I love that. We will throw all those links and conventional lifers up at the website at unconventionallifeshow.com. Ing, thank you so much for taking the time to chat with us, for sharing your wisdom, for sharing your story. It was so great to have you on the show today.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks, everyone.